Devotion, a dimensional shift. Most people live cautiously, measuring out their love and joy in sparing doses for fear that it will run out. The most generous way to live is to set an example to the rest of the world by living life full throttle and beyond all limitations. If you are so stingy that you cannot love, laugh, or live totally, you are what we in India term kanjus, a miser, on all levels. Devotion means you are not a kanjus, you are full of juice. A devotee is someone who seeks to explore and experience life as fully as possible. Devotion is not a dissection of life, but a total embrace. It is not a love affair, but a crazy business. Love itself is crazy, but there are shreds of sanity attached to it. You can still recover. In devotion, there is no shred of sanity. There is no way to recover. Devotees have the sweetest experience of life. Everybody may think they are idiots, but they are having the best time on planet. You decide who the idiot is. When I say devotion, I am not talking about faith or belief. Belief is just like morality. People who believe something often think they are superior to others. All that happens the moment you believe something is that your stupidity acquires confidence. Confidence and stupidity are a very dangerous combination, but they generally go together. If you start looking at the world around you, you would clearly understand that what you know is so minuscule that there is no way to act with confidence. A belief system takes away this problem. It gives you enormous confidence, but it does not cure your stupidity. Devotion is not an act. It is not directed towards one thing or another. The object of devotion is immaterial. It is just that with devotion, you have dissolved all the resistance in you so that the divine can transpire as effortlessly as breath. The divine is not an entity sitting up there. It is a living force every moment of your life. Devotion makes you aware of this. Once it happened, at a traditional Catholic family dinner, the man of the house came to the table, looked at the food, and as usual grumbled and cursed his wife and everything around him. After the cursing was over and everyone settled down, he sat down and uttered his prayer, "Dear God, thank you for the daily bread and all the wonderful things on the table." His 5-year-old girl sat meekly at the table. You know these 5-year-olds, extra pillows and little cushions are always kept for them, but still they can never really reach the plate. So this little 5-year-old girl with the table up to her neck squeaked, "Daddy, does God hear all our prayers?" Immediately the Christian in him awakened and he said, "Yes, of course, every prayer we utter, He always hears." Then the girl sank a little lower because she sank into her thoughts. After a while she said, "But Daddy, does He also listen to all the other things that we say?" "Yes, every moment of our lives, God is listening to everything that we say and do." Then she sank a little lower and said, "Daddy, then which does He believe? Tell me, what should God believe, your prayers or your curses?" He must be thoroughly confused. He must have given up. Because we systematize or institutionalize the most subtle parts of life, suddenly everything loses vibrancy and becomes lifeless. The same words are being uttered parrot-like by everybody, but they do not mean anything anymore. When we say something that does not really mean anything to us, that does not burn within us, it is tantamount to a lie. it is actually better to shut up. We are always trying to mimic those whom we consider to be our mentors or role models. When somebody said something similar 2,000 years ago, it worked for him because of the fire in his heart, because of the truth that was burning within him, not because of the words he uttered. There is nothing tame or tepid about devotion. It is not for the lily-livered. It is hot. Devotion scorches. Akka Mahadevi. Around 900 years ago, in southern India, there lived a female mystic called Akka Mahadevi. Akka was a devotee of Shiva. Ever since her childhood, she had regarded Shiva as her beloved, her husband. It was not just a belief for her, it was a living reality. The king saw this beautiful young woman one day and decided he wanted her as his wife. She refused, but the king was adamant and threatened her parents, so she yielded. She married the man, but she kept him at a physical distance. He tried to woo her, but her constant refrain was, "Shiva is my husband." Time passed and the king's patience wore thin. Infuriated, he tried to lay his hands upon her. She refused, "I have another husband. His name is Shiva. He visits me. I am with him. I cannot be with you." Because she claimed to have another husband, she was brought to court for prosecution. Akka is said to have announced to all present, "Being a queen does not mean a thing to me. I will leave." When the king saw the ease with which she was walking away from everything, he made a last futile effort to salvage his dignity. He said, "Everything on your person, your jewels, your garments, belong to me. Leave it all here and go." So in the full assembly, Akka just dropped her jewelry, all her clothes, and walked away naked. From that day on, she refused to wear clothes even though many tried to convince her otherwise. It was unbelievable for a woman to be walking naked on the streets of India at the time. This was a beautiful young woman. She lived out her life as a wandering mendicant and composed some exquisite poetry that lives on to this very day. In a poem, she says, "People, male and female, blush when a cloth covering their shame comes loose, when the Lord of lives lives drowned without a face in the world, how can you be modest? When all the world is the eye of the Lord, on looking everywhere, what can you cover and conceal?" Devotees of this kind may be in this world, but not of it. The power and passion with which they lived their lives make them inspirations for generations of humanity. Akka continues to be a living presence in the Indian collective consciousness. Her lyrical poems remain among the most prized works of South Indian literature to this very day. Embracing mystery. It is only a juvenile intelligence that analyzes things and arrives at a conclusion. If your intelligence is sufficiently evolved and mature, you realize that the more you analyze, the further away you are from any conclusion. If you go deeply into any aspect of life, you will move further and further away from any conclusion. Life becomes more mysterious than ever before. The more you delve into life, you see that it is an endless, unfathomable process. You cannot get it because you are it. When you realize experientially that every atom, every grain of sand, every pebble, every piece of life from the smallest to the biggest is unfathomable, you will naturally bow down in utmost devotion to everything. If you simply sit here and breathe, you will know life better than through any deep analysis. As we dissect everything, wanting to excavate truth from physical nature, we enter into the minute dimensions of particle science. From protons, neutrons, and electrons to neutrinos, bosons, and supersymmetric particles, we seem to be going deeper and deeper, but all this is still only in the realm of physical nature. Dark matter, we are told, comprises more of the universe than matter. This dark matter is not composed of atoms at all, but of particles of still unknown type. Pick up a glass of water and take a look at it. What do you really know about it? Why, for instance, do hydrogen and oxygen combine to become water? Or pick up a pebble and gaze at it long and hard. Why does it have this particular shape, size, grain, texture? Or just look at yourself, why are you the way you are? Many would reply, oh, my father, my mother, and here I am. But why are you like this? What is the basis of this form, this body, this individuality? Traditionally in India, it was said that one ought to bow down to everything that one encounters. It did not matter if it was a tree or a cow or a snake or a cloud, you just bow down to it. When you bow down to everything, it could be because you are a fool or because you have looked at life in its utmost profundity. The difference between an idiot and an enlightened being is thin. The two often look similar, but they are actually worlds apart. An idiot is incapable of drawing conclusions. A mystic is unwilling to draw conclusions. The rest have glorified their conclusions as knowledge. The fool just enjoys whatever little he knows. The one who has seen life in its utmost depth enjoys it absolutely. The rest are the ones who constantly struggle and suffer. One morning, a man walked into his office and told his boss, "Boss, I want you to know, three big companies are after me. You must give me a raise." His boss said, "What? Which companies? Who wants you?" He said, "The electric company, the telephone company, and the gas company." Something is always behind the so-called smart people, those with confirmed conclusions about life. Or else, they are always busy chasing something. An idiot can sit here quietly. A mystic can sit here quietly. The rest cannot. Devotion is a simple method of dissolving all the hurdles on the path. If those who are struggling to contain the chattering of the monkey mind become devoted, the chatter will just evaporate. If you learn to bow, to hold everything higher than yourself, it does not seem to be good for your self-esteem, but becoming a devotee does not mean you are a pushover. That which knows how to bend will not break. That is so with everything within you. Unfortunately, these days, even so-called spiritual leaders are talking about self-esteem. Self and esteem are both a problem. Both are very limited entities. Both are fragile. Both will always be insecure. If you have no esteem, very good. If you have no self, fabulous. Sadhana. When you experience something as far bigger than yourself, bowing down will naturally occur to you. If you want to become a devotee, at least once an hour in all the waking moments of your life, put your hands together and bow to something. It does not matter who or what, Don't choose. Whatever you see, just bow your head. Whether it is a tree, a mountain, a dog, a cat, or anything, this need not be a physical act. It could be internal action. Just do it throughout the day, once an hour. See if it can become once a minute. When it becomes once a minute, there is no need to use your hands and body. Simply do it within yourself. Once that becomes your way of being, you are a devotee. Even if you spend a lifetime, you still will not understand a leaf, an elephant, an ant, or an atom. You are incapable of figuring out even a molecule of DNA. Everything you cannot grasp is in a higher state of existential intelligence than you are. When you see this, really see this, you are a devotee. A devotee is someone who is willing to dissolve into the object of devotion. If you are a devotee of life, you will become one with it. Don't be an outsider to the life process. Become a devotee. Dissolve.